Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta 2 Yankee, Delta 2 Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
A soundscape is any collection of sounds, almost like a painting is a collection of visual attractions. I think when you listen carefully to the soundscape, it becomes quite miraculous when you listen carefully and marvel. Well, we hear the train going off into the distance. We can hear some birds, of course. We can hear some traffic noise from Highway 7, quite distant. The most interesting thing, of course, is the birds at this time of the day. We can hear them in all directions. I think if you listen carefully, your life is enhanced. I think it becomes much more interesting. It's the same as looking carefully. If you can use your senses properly, and in art we try to get people to use their senses, to listen carefully, to look carefully at things, that enriches your life. In a way, the world is a huge composition, a huge musical composition that's going on all the time, without a beginning and presumably without an ending. We are the composers of this huge, miraculous composition that's going on around us, and we can improve it or we can destroy it. We can add more noises or we can add more beautiful sounds. It's all up to us. In other societies, one had to exercise one's memory for sounds. There were no recordings. Every sound committed suicide, you might say, and would never be heard again, not exactly the same way. And in some ways, that made people more perceptive and more considerate of the soundscape that they were living with. They were more moved by it because it was living all the time around them. If you have an original sound, and then you put it through a microphone and distribute it through loudspeakers, you can multiply that sound by millions of times. So we're living in a kind of dreadful time in which we have sound overkill, and that's a real problem. So one thing we might think of doing is to begin to reduce the number of sounds in our life. A real sound, of course, is absolutely unique. It has an excitement about it and probably an authenticity, a fidelity that will never be achieved by recordings. But what you're hearing now is not real sound. My voice isn't coming from me. It's coming from sounds that were made a long time ago. And what happens if my voice stops? What do you hear then?
I studied the piano, for instance, at the same time as Glenn Gould. And while we knew each other, I had absolutely no interest in the piano. And we just had the same teacher, you know. And then I began to get interested in being a composer because I thought, if these guys can do it, why can't I do it? So I started to compose and gradually went from the performing end of the thing to the composing end. So for the past 30 or 40 years, I've lived in a different kind of environment, partly because I've loved living with nature. I would go, you know, into nature and began to understand it, began to listen to it and see how it sounded and how it behaved and so forth. And that's what I did a lot of work of that sort, in which the environment is my orchestra. So we do have ears to listen to the environment, and that's beginning to happen, and that's going to affect, I think, the behavior of a lot of people. I have great hope for the future that we're going to rediscover the acoustic environment in which we live, and we're going to celebrate it, and we're going to save it.
I had studied composition, music composition, of course, and I regarded myself as a composer. But I was teaching in a new university in Vancouver, and it was a communication department that I'd been hired to teach in. I didn't really know very much about communications, although I had
being quite close to Marshall McLuhan, who did a lot of work and research in communications, as everybody knows. In particular, I wanted to study acoustic communications and all kinds of acoustic communications, just personal talking between people, the sounds around us, the sounds made by the environment, the sounds from the past, the sounds of the future, and so forth. And creating that kind of a subject was very difficult, actually, because we didn't have a word to describe what I was talking about. And if you don't have a word to describe clearly what it is that everyone can understand, then it doesn't exist. And I think that's the reason that we paid very little attention to sound in our lives up to that period. And so if we'd done anything with the work in the acoustic environment and the soundscape, which is a word I had to create, then we managed to give that subject a real expression. I think the work that was done then at Simon Fraser University was very important worldwide. And the book, which I called originally The Tuning of the World, which was then translated into French as Le Paysage Sonore, The Tuning of the World is more accurate because what I really was thinking was that we are responsible for tuning the world. It's like tuning an instrument. You know, you tune your violin so that you can play beautifully. Well, you can tune the sounds of the world too, so that we have the kind of acoustic environment that is beautiful and not full of noises and other things that eliminate, that crush sounds, that destroy beautiful sounds. I think at that time, 1965 was about the most noisiest time in the Western world. The reason for that is that I would say that Jet aircraft were just coming in, commercial jet aircraft, in the early 1960s. That meant that the noise profile around airports was much larger than it had ever been. That people were complaining about the noise. In North America, the car manufacturers began to produce what they called muscle cars. Muscle cars were noisy cars. You know, so there was another area, you know, that was of complaint. There were just too many, and the Concorde, of course, was. They were going to introduce the Concorde. Fortunately, that didn't work out. But I mean, there were many new noises in the 1960s, and so people were becoming. I know. Because of the surveys we did, people were becoming much more concerned about the deterioration of the acoustic environment. Little by little, I think it has had an influence on our thinking. The question, for instance, of where are the disappearing sounds? Who's collecting them? Now there are many people who are collecting disappearing sounds and working with them and creating musical compositions from them. One person, by the way, I should mention this, who influenced me a great deal was Pierre Schaeffer. Pierre Schaeffer was the first person to record sounds, any sounds, and then manipulate them and turn them into compositions. So it was he was a very big influence at that time, I think, and his books influenced us all. So it was much later that we began to meet people in other countries that were interested in similar kinds of problems. And it was only when we began to travel and meet together and have conferences that we were able to form the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology. That exists, and we have meetings every year. And you'd be surprised at the area that these researchers now are exploring and coming from different traditions and different countries, and the research that's going on is really quite amazing. So we've done a lot in the last 4 decades. Well, noise is any unwanted sound, and of course, you know. You could have a very quiet noise too. I mean, it can be something that just a small hum that is bothering you and you can't go to sleep, you know, listening to this sound. So it's noise is not necessarily a loud sound. It's a sound that is the opposite in a way of the paysage sonore. I mean, it's what you don't want, what you want to eliminate. And those noises change. You know, what is considered a noise in one society is not considered a noise in another society. So we tend to be trying to escape noises by going inside houses. People in the past spent a lot more time outside, as we know. I think the soundscape today is much quieter than it was in the 60s and 70s. Now, that may surprise a lot of people. And it's very hard to go back and actually do measurements in 1960, although, you know, some measurements were done. But I think there's no doubt that the technologies have reduced some of their noise emission, and so that we're in a somewhat quieter world than we were at that time. However, in the world of entertainment, for instance, there has been no reduction of noise in pop music. Rock concerts still have 110 decibels or more, and people listen to it and destroy themselves by doing so. I think that what we are entering now is the beginning of an area of soundscape design in which many of the people that have become interested in our work in different countries I mentioned the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology. In many different countries, there are people that are now beginning to design sounds, to design the sounds of locomotives, the whistles on trains, to design the sounds in airports, for instance, so you don't have, you know, voices screaming at you all the time, flight 471 for, you know. There's other ways of getting the information to people without interrupting, you know, their thinking and so forth, and leaving them in peace when they have to spend two or three hours or more in an airport waiting. So I think there's a lot more thinking about acoustic design for the future, and that's the way the world seems to want it at the moment. I think the La Semaine du Son that you have in France is amazing and wonderful, and I hope it continues, because you've done something that no other country has yet been able to do, and that is you brought all the sound makers together to at least meet each other and talk and see that there is a relationship between their work. And I think that's very important. And I have nothing but praise for Christian Huguenet and his team for what they've accomplished. And now it's beginning to catch on in other countries too. So that will be something really interesting if we do have you know, weeks of sound in different, if we had 52 countries that celebrated the La Semaine du Son, we could do nothing but go from one conference to another. Wonderful, eh?
Thank you. La conciencia visual no es igual a la conciencia oral. La conciencia visual mira hacia adelante. La conciencia oral está centrada. Me encuentro siempre en el corazón del universo sonoro. Me habla con sus muchas lenguas. Me habla con las lenguas de los dioses.
In a way, the world is a huge composition, a huge musical composition that's going on all the time, without a beginning and presumably without an ending. We are the composers of this huge, miraculous composition that's going on around us, and we can improve it or we can destroy it. We can add more noises or we can add more beautiful sounds. It's all up to us.
Los sonidos no pueden conocerse de la misma manera que puede conocerse lo que se ve. La visión es reflexiva y analítica, coloca las cosas una junto a otra y las compara, siendo la razón por la que Aristóteles la prefería como fuente principal de conocimientos. No se puede pesar un susurro, contar las voces de un coro o medir la risa de un niño. Todo sonido se suicida y no vuelve. Los músicos saben que ninguna frase musical puede repetirse de manera idéntica dos veces.
A real sound, of course, is absolutely unique. It has an excitement about it and probably an authenticity, a fidelity that will never be achieved by recordings. But what you're hearing now is not real sound. My voice isn't coming from me. It's coming from sounds that were made a long time ago. And what happens if my voice stops? What do you hear then?
Raymond Murray Schaeffer, 18 de julio de 1933, 14 de agosto de 2021.
Una producción de la Escuela Creativa de Radio, TEA FM.
Realizada en los estudios del Centro de Tecnologías Avanzadas del INAEM, en Zaragoza.